Why get all your holiday decorations delivered through Instacart? Because maybe you only bought two wreaths, but you have 12 windows. Or maybe your toddler got very eager with the advent calendar. Or maybe the inflatable snowman didn't make it through the snowstorm. Or maybe the twinkle lights aren't twinkling. Whatever the reason, this season, Instacart's here for hosts and their whole holiday haul. Get decorations from the Home Depot, CVS, and more through Instacart and enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some. I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time, turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding now. 5 hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, into the 7 o'clock hour. We go. Before we play this audio from D'Amico Ryans, let me preface. I think D'Amico's done a really good job since he came here as a head coach. This rebuild's gotten done much quicker than most rebuilds get out of the gates. You know, making the playoffs, winning a playoff game. I think in some respects, you and I talked about this yesterday, Seth. In some respects, the angst that the fan base is feeling right now is probably a function of what they accomplished last year. If they'd gone 9-8 and not made the playoffs last year, I don't think people are nearly as anxious about them being 6-4 and having some offensive struggles right now. But expectations are what fuel a lot of this, and that's fine.
Yeah,
that's fine. But I, you know, so when we're about to dig in on D'Amico here, this is not like D'Amico. This is not like in Chicago where they're getting ready to fire Matt Eberflus type stuff.
Well, and I think almost it's actually added on to that, it's not just that expectations were higher, it's that you had a quarterback who was the offensive rookie of the year.
Yes.
And he's entering sophomore Slumpville.
Yeah.
And nobody wants to live in Slumpville.
It's the worst town ever. Slumpville's horrible. Because the ways to get out of Slumpville are not fun. The Slump Buster. It's not, that's not.
Well, I mean, it's fun.
I mean,
it's
not what you would hope for. Let's just.
Right.
Anyways. So now, and I'm glad you brought up the quarterback, because that's where the questions are starting to get honed in on here. Lately, this is, we're starting to get questions. I would not have foreseen getting questions about the operation at this point with D'Amico Ryans. You know,
now you're talking about the questions, not just about the play on the field itself, but the way decisions are made,
yes,
the way coaches are coached. Yeah,
that's exactly
that.
What I'm talking about.
Yeah.
I am not talking about the on the field. I am talking about the things that lead to the on the field, the things that are done during the week, the things that are done in the locker room during games. This was D'Amico Ryans on game plan adjustments yesterday.
Any game plan, you can talk about adjustments. I think that's always a factor when you talk about scouting yourself, the self-scouts, and also scouting your opponents. So you're always looking at tendencies and things to change, things to add, or do something a little different. But it's, at the end of the day, you still have to execute whatever changes you make. But that's part of any game, is about, you know, adjusting.
And he's getting asked about that because his offense has not scored a touchdown in 4 weeks in the second half of football games.
Yeah, and
it's
and
not
also,
just some silly ha-ha question to get an answer, like, oh, well, tell us about adjustments. You know?
Right, because even if, you know, I've talked yesterday about, okay, well, you know, at the very least, they had an easy touchdown to Tank Dell if CJ had made the right throw. You could take all those what ifs, the Green Bay game, you know, there could have been a touchdown there, and it still doesn't add up to much scoring in the second half.
Right.
So
right.
Yeah, it's been a bit of an issue, and then Bobby Slowick's been, I a little bit dismissive about second half adjustments when asked about it, I don't think he's given answers that are wrong. It's whenever coaches are asked about adjustments, I think some of them will talk like, no, there's no adjustments, but they mean there's no like huge cataclysmic, like, oh, we came up with the super secret play. It's usually not as dramatic as that. It's just little tweaks here and there.
Yeah, the most defensible for the second half adjustment thing, the narrative that's out there about that with the Texans, and obviously the results fuel the narrative big time right now. But the one thing I've heard coaches say throughout the last, or maybe it might have been Bobby or other coaches, is this has become such a thing for the Texans, is that the locker room at halftime is just one data point where we're making adjustments after the second series of the third quarter. You know, there's adjustments made all game long. Like, let's not get it twisted that a 12-minute halftime, which is really like a 7-minute halftime once you get everybody in the locker room and then gather everybody up and everybody takes a leak and everything else. Like, it's not as big a thing as, the adjustments that get made on the sideline during the game are just as big as the ones made in the locker room.
And there are exceptions, too, where, you know, Robert Saleh tells a great story about they were having a hard time with the Rams, I think, option game at one point. So they changed their rules for how they were going to handle the option, either at halftime or on the sideline or wherever it was, and it ended up being huge for them. So adjustments are made within the game.
Sure.
It's not like those are the key every single halftime, I guess.
The answer you're about to hear, this question, I think it was Cody who asked this question, Cody Stutes, I'm pretty sure. If it's not, I apologize to whoever did. But was asked, this is where I'm watching this press conference yesterday, Seth, as I'm out in the nice sunshiny day, smoking a cigar, watching this on my computer. And this is the one that kind of got me in the gut a little bit, because this was very relatable for me, getting asked a question like this for D'Amico Ryans. And I'll explain why in a second. But D'Amico was asked, who's involved in the play calling?
Yeah, when it comes to the game planning, all of our offensive coaches have input on plays, suggestions, all of those things. So every coach is suggesting whether it's run game, and everybody has different phases of the game, different situations, third down, 2 minute, whatever it may be. So all coaches have input on putting the game plan together, and everybody, they put it together, right, together. And, you know, I have some input as well on things I've seen, of things I may suggest to Bobby as well when it comes to the game planning mode.
This is why this is relatable for me. Nobody ever asked any questions last year about who's involved in the game. If it's working, nobody cares who's involved in the game planning, right? Like, these are not questions that get asked of highly. I'm guessing Andy Reid never gets questions about who's involved in the game planning. You know, like, it's to the tone that it is right now. Like, the reasons why, we know the reasons why D'Amico's being asked about this. The reason why this is relatable for me is, like, I think back to when I was, before I got into radio, and when I was vice president of sales. So I was like the head coach of sales for my company, and I had all these 7 regions that reported to me that were like the equivalent of like coordinators or assistant coaches. And I was pretty good at my job. I wasn't D'Amico Ryans level good, but I was pretty good. But during my tenure, there were a couple regions that were failing, and that was my responsibility. And I remember, like, when you have shareholders that you're responsible for, and you have a CEO that you report to, and I guess in this case, the CEO for D'Amico is the media or the Texan fans, they sit you down and they start to ask, okay, tell me about John Comello and how he's doing here. What are we doing here to fix this? How involved are you in the sales process in that region? Do you go on sales call? How much time do you spend in that region? Like, what's the process? What's the process for prospecting? They start to dig into the process, and it's an uncomfortable stage if you're a leader. And that's where we're veering into with the offense right now. If things don't get fixed, these are going to continue. We're watching other teams fire coordinators, and I'm not saying fire Bobby Slowick, but D'Amico was not getting these questions about, tell us about the adjustments. Tell us about who's involved in this and who's involved in that. Because if it were working, we wouldn't care. And I
think with the game planning part of it specifically, okay, how involved is D'Amico with the offensive side of the ball? Because that is the question and the discussions that are always going to come up when you have a defensive-minded head coach is, all right, what is he actually doing to hire the right coordinator, then oversee the coordinator, and how can he be like a Mike Tomlin or a Bill Belichick or various other defensive head coaches who have had good offensive coordinators? You've got to prove your worth there.
Yeah.
And that's where it's starting to come. That's where the questions will start to and remain.
Spoiler alert, John Comello got fired. You know, like, that was just a personal, that was relatable to me. I'm like, oh man, like they're starting to ask the questions about what's your process? Like, how does this work? This thing that's not working. How does this work?
I didn't. Yeah, real quick, I couldn't remember John Camello's name from just 45 seconds earlier, so I thought you were talking about some offensive coordinator. I was like, who the hell's John Camello?
Oh,
what the
no,
hell's
yeah.
wrong with me?
No, he,
okay.
was my regional or of
yeah,
area
the guy that
sales
was under, that you had to answer questions for. How quick after you? How long did it take you to fire him after they gave you that hit?
It was a couple months after that. Yeah, we tried to fix some things, and there was it just didn't get fixed. You know, well, I mean, eventually it got fixed, but. Yeah, that's how it goes.
Somebody
man.
Look him up and tell us what he's doing right now. We gotta get John Camello on the air.
No, we don't.
Yes, we do.
No, we don't. Oh man, I don't want to relive that. So that was D'Amico yesterday. The other thing that's popping up now for D'Amico is on Reddit, Bill O'Brien stats. After the Texans blew a first half lead in the Sunday game, it was pointed out on Reddit that D'Amico Ryans has now lost more games when leading at halftime than Bill O'Brien did his entire time with the Texans.
Yeah.
This is not me saying that that Bill O'Brien's a better coach than D'Amico Ryans. I'm saying this is the stage the fans are at right now.
I think the thing about that is it's not like D'Amico Ryan's stats are awful in that regard, especially in a relatively small sample
13 and
size.
5 when leading at halftime.
13 and 5. And I don't know what the normal average is or what have you, but I think it was a reflection of the oddity that was Bill O'Brien. That was one of those stats that you knew about him, you acknowledged how impressive it really was to be that good when leading at the half. And yet, it was... The thing that led to that was never felt good, like the way they would play conservatively in the second half. Yeah. In the moment, it never felt good. It never felt good to do the right thing. Yeah. And I think people just didn't latch on to that. And the other was that I just felt like it was, I don't know, just like kind of flukish, right? It wasn't, am I just being
a
jerk?
Well, it was, I'll say this about Bill. Well, let me give the number first for those, because some people may be unfamiliar with what we're talking about.
Oh, I thought you had
here.
Said it already.
I hadn't said his number. I just said that D'Amico had lost more. Bill O'Brien was 37-4 when leading at halftime as Texans head coach. It got a lot of attention when it got to 31-1. He was 31-1 at one point, and I don't remember what the one was at the time, but he was 31-1. He ended up 37-4 when leading at halftime. I don't recall if it was because O'Brien had any sort of secret sauce. I mean, he loved to run the football, and if you were running it successfully in a game, that was a good way to burn out the clock. Bill O'Brien was at his best, honestly, when he was handed janky-ass backup quarterbacks for a couple of years and was able to go win games. So that was
They've been doing it in creative ways.
Yes.
When Case Keenum came in, they kind of threw in some stuff on the fly that he was comfortable with. Credit to Bill O'Brien, but I don't think it's quite it was a very impressive run that Bill O'Brien
31-1 at the time was like, okay,
that was very impressive, but it's not like it's a weakness of D'Amico's.
No, I think that's what you and I are pointing out. Like the fans are restless right now.
Right, well, no, but it does. Okay, you look at I it's just ironic because I think you see that stat and you want to say, yeah, be more aggressive in the second half, close these games out. And yet, the way Bill O'Brien got that record was by following more of D'Amico Ryan's methodology. Yeah. He just did a better job of executing.
Yeah.
Word nobody wants to hear anymore.
Yeah. Speaking of firing coaches, Shane Waldron, fired by the Bears as their OC on yesterday. It came down during our show yesterday. Shane Waldron fired as the OC. So Caleb Williams will now be on his second offensive coordinator, 10 games into his NFL career. They played this audio on In the Loop yesterday. I had forgotten about this. But when Jackson Smith and Shane Waldron, who had been with the Seahawks the last few seasons before going to the Bay, got fired by the Seahawks, goes to the Bears. And so Jackson Smith and Jigba was... I can't remember if it was at the Super Bowl or somewhere, but he was on. He was doing an interview with some Chicago guys, Jackson Smith and Jigba, wide receiver for the Seahawks, who spent a season with Shane Waldron. And they asked, at that point, Waldron was hired by the Bears, so these hosts from Chicago were looking for a little intel on their new OC, and so they asked Jackson Smith and Jigba, like, hey, tell us about Shane Waldron.
Bears fans are super interested about the offensive coordinator coming in, Shane Waldron. What can you tell them about who they just hired to try to get this offense where it needs to go?
This is live?
Yeah. We're not live.
I'm playing. good luck to y'all. I mean, he's a great person.
He's got a great personality.
Whenever the great person comes first,
makes good lasagna.
Yeah. Or with a coach. I think it was Emmanuel Acho I saw yesterday reading a text he'd gotten from somebody at Seattle who he said was a Pro Bowl player. The text basically was like, oh, nope, that ain't it. That ain't going to work. So, yeah. And Shane Waldron, when you look at his track record, you wonder, why is this guy, why did he get another job as an offensive coordinator after what he did in Seattle? He must be really like hell on wheels on the whiteboard, you know, when he gets up and explains things and spouts off his football philosophy.
He's good in interviews, man. I might hire him as a salesperson. He sold himself multiple times to teams.
A lot better than Joe Camello.
That's John Camello.
I'll say his right name when he meets his quotas.
I'll get John Camello on the show if you get Richard Smith on the show. How's that?
Yeah.
There was a report that the players went to manage. That's how you know it's bad, man. Like the Bears players went to management basically and said, "Hey, this guy ain't it."
Yeah.
Some of them were reportedly wanted Tyson Bagent to start over Caleb Williams.
Time to move on.
It's time to at least do like say what Indianapolis did, which is, "Hey, let's let the young guy watch."
And you've pointed out that the track record of guys getting benched after already being the starter is really poor.
It's a death blow. Essentially a death blow, yeah.
I think that with Caleb Williams, the one thing about him is, he's getting sacked a lot, but he's also holding on to the ball a long, long time. And his average time to throw is just way up there. And that was his scouting report coming out of college. So it might be the worst scenario. The fact that if you don't, because they just don't have good offensive linemen up there. But it's also you're adding into it a guy that's going to try to make something out of nothing way more than he probably should.
I had totally forgotten about this until people started pointing this out yesterday about the Bears and about Jaden Daniels with the Commanders. That the Bears, Cliff Kingsbury was out there for the taking. Like, he interviewed with the Raiders. I think he may have even interviewed with the Bears. And he was, but at the very least, we know he was Caleb Williams. He was with Caleb Williams at USC. And if I'm a Bears fan, that's probably pretty infuriating right now to see, like, not only is Caleb Williams floundering right now, in part because of his own doing, but also in part because of poor decisions as to who to put with him, evidently, because they just fired the guy. But Jaden Daniels is flourishing right now with Caleb Williams, quarterback's coach, his OC.
This is going to get real interesting. This is where there's a lot of people watching Washington, not just for the obvious reasons, but this is around the point in the season when Cliff Kingsbury's offenses in Arizona fell off a cliff.
Yeah.
Also at Texas Tech, the back third of the season, that was when he really would falter as a head coach. So is this when, and he's facing Vic Fangio this week, very, very intelligent defensive coordinator. Is this when when people start to catch up to him, or does Cliff Kingsbury push on through?
Here's their schedule. You ready? This is their schedule the rest of the way. They've got 7 games left. At Philadelphia, home for Dallas, home for Tennessee. Tennessee, not a bad defensive team.
Yeah, their defense has been good this last week, notwithstanding. Yeah.
Week 14 bye, then at New Orleans, home for Philly, home for Atlanta, at Dallas. What is their record right now? They're 7-3. Dude, Washington could win 12 games.
Yeah.
I mean, that is not you got the two Philly games that are going to be difficult. Atlanta just lost to New Orleans. And you got 2 Dallas games, a Tennessee game, a New Orleans game, and Atlanta. If Washington finishes anything below 11-6, something has gone horrible. if Washington finishes below 11-6, what you're talking about with Kingsbury, the possibility that the league might have caught up with him, or that the there's just this Kingsbury malaise in the second half of the season, then that had to have happened if they're less than 11-6 against that schedule with that quarterback.
Unless something else falls apart because they're playing well defensively too.
Yep.
That's another, Cliff Kingsbury has been impressive enough and Jaden Daniels has been impressive enough that Dan Quinn isn't the favorite for coach of the year right now. It's Mike Tomlin is the favorite, where I feel like Dan Quinn is in an organization that everybody had basically looked at as just about dead, as close to being like never insalvageable, and yet he's not even the favorite for coach of the year because he's got a quarterback and an offensive coordinator that are getting a lot of buzz.
Yep. So that's Eberflus. They've now had eight assistants fired or resigned in the last 14 months under Matt Eberflus. Eventually, Matt Eberflus has to get fired, right?
That's he's got to know, right? No, he knows. He's just going to be. It's going to be him and going to be him and two quality control guys there by the end of the season.
Okay, so then is Ryan Poles out of people to point fingers at that point? Ryan Poles, the media whore.
Ryan Poles, the GM of the Bears, who just cannot get enough Ryan Poles. The fact that the offensive line are because I don't want to talk about just the starters or something. They are just such an incredibly slipshod cast of misfits. It's almost like something out of... They're like the guys who are cast to play offensive linemen in Hollywood movies.
Right.
They're just like, oh, give me some fat guy out there, right? He can be an offensive lineman. They're awful, and that's who you put in front of your rookie quarterback. Awful. It's really bad.
Yeah, yeah.
I know Texans fans are saying, like, what are you talking about? No. It's bad. It's really bad.
Are you surprised? I haven't seen many interviews with Ryan Poles lately. He's been awfully quiet about the Bears.
He's not granting access to writers from the Athletic.
The offseason, the guy doesn't shut the hell up. Yeah, he's about himself.
I'm PO'd about all of that because Jeff Luhnow never got the benefit of the doubt while they were being awful. The Astros were just lampooned relentlessly. And now when Ryan Poles was tanking, people were like, oh boy, he just keeps making the right move after the right move. Like, what are you doing? Yeah, but they haven't. They're still awful.
And one.
What are you going to tell me that he's doing a great job? You haven't seen any of these players work out yet?
Text message, 5-Hour Energy fan line, 5-Hour Energy, the official energy shot of Sports Radio 610. And football super fans, Sean, this is John Camello. I hope you start snoring again.
John Camello's life went to pot after you fired him.
I don't think it did. I think he did fine. I think he did okay.
Did you hire him or did you?
No. I did not. Okay. I did not hire. I didn't hire him. He largely did a really good job. It's just he hit rough patches. It happens.
Yeah.
Aziz Alshire met with the media yesterday. That was kind of good. The Texans trotted a few players out in front of the media. They were good ones. We'll hear from Jalen Petrie here in a minute. I think this is a concern I think fans have sometimes. I do think a D'Amico Ryans team is going to be as immune to this as maybe any team, but the frustration, is there frustration building between the two sides of the football? Like, is there frustration on the defense since you guys did your job in that game against Detroit?
I mean, if we handled our part, then they wouldn't have scored the points to end up winning the game. So it's tough because, can you look at the stat line and say we made a quarterback throw 5 interceptions? Like, no question. If you just read that stat line to me, for any team, it could be Little League for all I care. I'm like, they won the game. And then when you see, like, what happened and what transpired throughout the game, I think it's just playing every single play. Like, we all had plays that we could have been better. Because if it was just about the 5 interceptions, then cool. But, come out and we're up 23-7. I don't care if the offense don't score another point, because if their offense doesn't score another point, then we win the game and nobody's talking. Like, y'all can still probably talk about the offensive struggles and all that, but we still win the game, So I think, again, it's just a mentality that you got to have and the perspective, because if you feel like, we did our part, we did good. It's like, I'm telling you, that's a setup for a bad outcome in the long run.
Yeah, I was trying to think about various situations that I was either in or in Houston history, and I think the most notable was back when Buddy Ryan is punching Kevin
Gilbride.
Gilbride, thank you. There's an intense and heated rivalry between the offense and defense. Most of that was driven by Buddy Ryan being a psychopath. So that's not a healthy environment, you know? That's how you end up having disappointing seasons in the early 90s when you got that kind of environment. I think that the situation with the Texans is it's not I would be really surprised if defensive players started resenting offensive players or anything like that. As long as C.J. Stroud is the quarterback, I think that there's a belief in C.J. Stroud, and it hasn't been as good as they've been. It hasn't been such a dominating defense that there haven't been a lot of moments where you're like, oh wow, the offense really let the defense down. It's been second quarter collapses by both on both fronts at times. Mm-hmm. So I'm not worried about it. And Azeez Alshire as a leader knows everything he just said. He always sums it up perfectly. You've got to actively fight against kind of having that mentality.
Yeah, I'm not worried about that becoming a thing with the Texans. I mean, it could, I guess, I suppose. I feel like just based on who they have as their coach, based on who they bring in as play, like I think a big part of the profile of the type of player, the type of person they look for is that type of person or player is not a finger pointer, you know?
Yeah. Right, and that is huge. Like, I think about the first year of the franchise in 2002 when we had some really good veteran defensive players. We were a much better defense than the stats would show because the offense was so bad. So we were just out there forever. But I think like in that year, it was so obvious the reasons for the difference. You had a rookie quarterback playing behind three or four starting rookie offensive linemen. It was a bad situation for the offense. Mm-hmm. And we kind of knew it. So that never became an issue. I never remember it just getting angry at the offense or anything.
Yeah.
It was what it was. And I think that with D'Amico, I don't think D'Amico's defensive players are ever, they're going to have it drilled in their head constantly. Like, hey, you just can't control what you can't control. You go out and take care of your business, you know?
Yep. Text message, 5-hour energy fan line. Someone says, that's why Azeez should be a captain. Azeez is a captain. He's a captain already, so don't worry. He's got the C on his jersey.
The listener is just trying to take a shot at Laramie Tunsil. He should be a captain.
Okay.
As opposed to others.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
That's how I would interpret that.
I can see that, yeah. This next one from Azeez, I think, is why Seth Payne would really like Azeez Alshire. I think Azeez answering why they had another, I don't know if you knew this, Seth, they had another players-only meeting after the game on Sunday.
They're addicted.
The Texans, they love these players-only meetings. Yeah. So they had another one after the game on Sunday, and Azeez Alshire was asked why, and I think Seth Payne is going to like this answer.
Just kind of check in, you don't check in with the guys, just like you don't check in with your wife, you think everything's going good, and whole time, hey, how you doing? And then she just spazzes, like, whoa, I thought it was good. So I think it's always good, like it's never a bad thing to just check in and see how everything's going, especially for me. I mean, I've been hurt for the last 3 weeks, so I got a different perspective watching from afar, so I think it's just a good check-in for everybody.
He wants to check in on his relationship, man, a relationship analogy.
That's a wise old man analogy right there. The guy that's worked on his marriage and understands that relationships take work.
That's it, man.
When things are good, you keep them good by put a little work. So you got to tend the garden. That's all Alshire's saying is you got to tend to the garden.
It is tough, though. Like, he's almost talking there, because he was out for 3 weeks. I mean, he's around, but he's out for 3 weeks. He's like, hey, man, I've been out of this leadership thing for a little bit. I want to dip my toe back in the leadership water.
I played a lot of video games while I was gone. That's all.
I got to get my leadership groove back. Yeah.
I think that I know that people hear about players-only meetings, and yes, a lot of times they are a harbinger of doom, but it doesn't mean that they're not also positive. When you do them regularly, and that's just the standard way of operating, to try to get any kind of potential festering issues out in the open, it's a lot easier if you're meeting like, I don't want to say frequent because I hate like everyday meetings for no reason, but you want to be sure guys are checking in with each other as a leadership group or whatever, to nip those things in the bud and to get things out in the open. And the more you do it, the more comfortable you are bringing up issues, you know, where you're not, it doesn't feel like, uh-oh. Like, my, you know, Parker, our boss, called me twice yesterday.
He did?
It's just, yeah, and I didn't know why.
Did you get nervous when you looked down at the phone and you saw it was Parker calling?
I did. I texted him and I was like, hey, he said, can we have a phone? He said, like, can we talk on the phone today?
Oh.
That's how he framed it. And I was like, oh, boy. And I started thinking about, like, oh, boy, which where was the camera hidden that I didn't know about? people don't know what I do in the nooks and crannies of this office. But that ended up being no big deal. That was just talking about the logistics of the Monday night game next week. But then the next time I got a call, and this was, I basically intellectual property violation. I did something on my social media that I wasn't supposed to do.
Oh, really?
And it ended up not being a big deal. But okay. He was like, hey, just this one person, basically, it was something they could have made a big deal out of because I used some video that I wasn't supposed to be using.
I got
and,
you.
And it was it gets dicey, but it's anyway. But that ended up all right.
Yeah,
but I did actually do something wrong.
It was a coaching moment for you. That's all it was.
Yeah,
it wasn't a fireable offense or anything like that.
Yeah. I thought I was going to get fined by the FCC or something.
That would be worse because that would cost actual money. That would suck.
We do the trademark law and intellectual property laws flummoxes me sometimes.
Yeah. Payne and Pendergast with you. 5 Hour Energy fan line, 713-572-4610. This many players only meetings means there are serious internal problems. That's a text message. Does this mean there are serious internal problems? I suppose there could be a perception like, hey, if the players need to get together this much, why aren't the coaches solving some of these things?
I think, I would say it's a problem in as much as what's the outcome. You know, I feel like saying that, how did the texter phrase that?
I'll read it verbatim again.
Yeah.
This many players only meetings means there are serious internal problems.
Yeah, I don't get. There's a lot more players meetings than ever get reported to the media.
That's what I was going to ask you. Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you.
When one does seep out for whatever reason, and then especially if there's a win afterwards, then it becomes a really big deal. So now people are asking after this game, did you guys have a players only meeting? You know, it's not something that guys might have offered up, but because Jonathan Alexander really wrote a really good piece in the Chronicle about it. People are asking about it afterwards. So, that's like saying, like, yeah, don't get a prostate exam. What do you? My uncle got a prostate exam. Found out he had cancer afterwards. It was like, sometimes you gotta check it out, and sometimes there's problems, and sometimes there's not.
I'll make an actual football comparison. It's like when it was reported that Lovie Smith was going into ownership and management. To lobby for his job towards the end of the season in 2022. And as it turns out, he had a standing meeting every week with them.
Yes, exactly. Right. Yeah, this was something that had always been going on.
Yeah. So
to talk about his prostate.
He was at that age where it would be a topic of discussion. You know, it would be something to bring up at parties and whatnot. Yeah.
Doesn't the NFL have like a prostate exam week or something? Or like brown armbands, what do they do?
I don't know.
Because they do cancer. They do the
breast cancer. They do the my cause, my cleats, where everybody gets. I would imagine that with my cause, my cleats, there's several prostate cleats running around on the field that weekend.
It's to be. Heck, we could really lean into that.
Yeah, maybe so. Yeah. Maybe so. Here's Jalen Petrie talking about handling losing 3 out of the last 4.
Not at all.
Sorry about that, Ben.
I think the most important thing that is being relayed is understanding that nobody is going to come and save us, that everybody from the top to the bottom, from the left to the right, you know, we got to take ownership in what we're doing and make sure that, you know, we have good energy. I think the energy is going to carry the momentum and it's going to propel us to where we want to go.
I like Petrie, man. I'm glad he's playing better this year. I love that no one's coming to save us. That feels like something they were told after the trade deadline.
That's another one of those phrases, though, that feels way more dramatic. And when you first hear it, in my mind,
I like it.
It takes me to too many movies where things don't turn out well.
Okay.
At the very least, a bunch of people die and a few people are saved.
I think offensively in the second half of football games, yeah. I think that's the stage we're at right now. I think
nobody's coming to save us.
No one's coming to save us, man. You got to start scoring some freaking touchdowns, all right, on your own. No one's going to score them for you.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I'm a little bummed that we only do the petty cast once a week. Maybe we should start to sprinkle it in a little bit more, because sometimes we get gems on other days throughout the week.
Mm-hmm.
Could this be construed as petty? This was Steelers head coach Mike Tomlin. They're playing the Ravens this week. And Deontay Johnson is a Raven. He was a Steeler last year, the last few years. Kind of a problem child. Which was why he became a Carolina Panther this offseason. Good player, not a great player, but a good player who was probably a little more trouble than he was worth for that Steelers locker room.
Yeah.
He's a Raven now. He's played one game for the Ravens, kind of. He played just a few snaps, to which he immediately took to social media about as a Raven. Mike Tomlin was asked about going up against Deontay Johnson this weekend in the Ravens.
To be honest with you, I hadn't thought a lot about it. He's not on a lot of their video, and so, you know, at this stage of the week, I don't know that I've weighed, you know, what he might mean to the matchup. They got more significant pieces with larger roles that are occupying my attention at this part of the week.
All true. All true.
It's all true. But nothing he said was untrue.
Right.
I read it. I read the quote, and I'm like, okay, I could see everything he's saying is true.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to hear the tone of voice. And I think in listening to it,
yeah,
I think it was just the length with which he went on about
he
it.
It's he hit a couple extra punches.
Yeah. He could have said, like, hey, he just got there, and we really haven't seen a lot of him. But he tripled and quadrupled down on how little he saw Deontay Johnson.
Highlighted
and,
his insignificance to this team.
Yeah. It was the Don Draper gif of him saying, I don't think about you at all in the elevator. I don't think about you at all.
That's exactly right.
That was petty. Good job, Mike Tomlin. Good job.
That is good. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. 713-572-4610 is the 5-Hour Energy fan line. 5-Hour Energy, the official energy shot of Sports Radio 610 and football superfans. My wife wants a text. My wife wants to have a players-only meeting 3 times a week, and I'm probably in trouble. Yeah, how many times do you have to have the equivalent of a players-only meeting in your marriage?
I say you put a disco ball in your bedroom and say that this is a players-only meeting.
and everything.
Make it romantic, yeah.
There you go. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. Up next, let's circle over to Alex Bregman. The odds are out on his landing spots if he doesn't stay here. Still a lot of experts think he's going to remain a Houston Astro, but if not, what would our emotions be if he landed at any of these 5 landing spots, the top 5 spots on the board for Alex Bregman? What would our gut reaction be to these if it happens in the coming weeks? That's next.
The holidays are all about sharing with family. Meals, couches, stories, grandma's secret pecan pie recipe. And now you can also share a cart with Instacart's family carts. Everyone can add what they want to one group cart from wherever they are. So you don't have to go from room to room to find out who wants cranberry sauce or who should get mini marshmallows for the yams or collecting votes for sugar cookies versus shortbread. Just share a cart and then share the meals and the moments. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus enjoy free delivery on your first 3 orders. Service fees and terms apply.
This show is brought to you by 5-Hour Energy. Being a fan is a hands-on job, which is why we're freeing up your hands for cheering, jeering, and everything in between. With 5-Hour Energy Fan E-Pack, you'll be fully equipped to hit the tailgate with all the energy you and your fellow diehards need for rooting on the home team. No matter what, just take a shot past the rest to your entire squad and keep the good times rolling. Now available on 5hourenergy.com with the purchase of Stan the Fan 5-Hour Energy. Shipped nationwide.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, things quiet so far on the baseball free agency front. No new news yet. A lot of speculation out there as to what could happen with Alex Bregman. Alex Bregman's one of the biggest free agents out there. He's the biggest free agent for the Astros. I'm seeing a lot more speculation than I thought I'd see from national people, Seth, that Bregman will be back here. A lot of it centered around, I just can't picture him anywhere else.
Yeah, that's where I'm wondering. I'm seeing a lot of I've seen at least two different national writers estimate the chances of Bregman being back as basically 50-50. And that to me I read that more as they don't have a clue, you know, but maybe the fact that they don't have a clue is actually a positive sign for Bregman's return, because usually most of the people would be saying, well, it's just not what the Astros do. They're going to let him walk.
Things are quiet right now. I think, you know, to me, quiet is good. If you're an Astros fan hoping Bregman's coming back, quiet. No news is good news.
Heated fervor or competition necessarily that the Astros aren't going to be able to compete with, perhaps.
Yeah, we haven't heard of six meetings that Bregman's taking out in L.A. with his agent or something like that, you know, or in Arizona. I know he's got a place there. The five top places for Bregman to land if he doesn't stay with the Astros. The favorite is, a little surprised by this because they're just not a very good baseball team right now. The Washington Nationals are the favorite to land Alex Bregman if he doesn't stay with the Astros, plus 450, which is 4.5 to 1. You risk $100, you win $450. What would the gut reaction be if we got a tweet from Ken Rosenthal saying Alex Bregman has signed a 6-year, $200 million deal with the Washington Nationals?
My gut reaction would be like, okay. I've got no, I mean, other than the World Series loss, it's not an intra-league rival or anything like that I don't have huge emotional feelings about. I'd say, good for them and him.
I don't even feel like it's a team we would run into if the Astros are a contender again. I don't even feel like that's a team they would run into in the World Series. You know what I mean? You're going to play them in the one obligatory series that you've got with them each year. So you'll see Bregman. I don't know if they play here or there this season, but I'm with you. I'm like, okay. I guess maybe winning immediately is not as important to him. I don't know.
I guess the immediate thing that I thought was kind of weird, I was trying to figure out, was like, okay, what did Bregman's grandfather do? Oh yeah, he was with the Washington Senators and was part of moving them to Dallas. I don't know. The city of Washington will never accept that traitor. I don't know. He's the guy who took the Senators from us.
He was supposedly at the Commanders game this weekend, Alex Bregman.
Alex was?
Yeah, okay. So maybe that's fueling some of this. Who knows? All right, next one. Number two on the list, Detroit Tigers are 5-1 to land Alex Bregman if he chooses to leave Houston. Gut reaction, if he goes to the team that, A, is managed by A.J. Hinch, and B, knock the Astros out of the playoffs.
Yeah, I don't like the people from Detroit all of a sudden. Mm-hmm. It's been too much.
There's too much drama. Now. Yeah.
Yeah, between the numerous Detroit Tigers fans who all but gave me death threats, Sean.
There was the one.
on Twitter. numerous, Sean.
Yeah, numerous.
One is a number.
That is.
Yeah, and then the rude and boorish behavior of Lions fans during our pregame show the other day. Just unacceptable. They can all go die. And no, Alex Bregman is not allowed to go to the Detroit Tigers.
I would be way more worked up about this now than I would have been like 2 months ago about him going to the Tigers. 2 months ago, I'd have been like, okay. You know, he's going to play with A.J. Hinch. It sucks that he's leaving. That part would hurt me more than where he's going or whatever. But yeah, like now that Detroit has become a bit of a thorn in our side.
I'm torn with that because I'm glad that A.J. Hinch, you know, didn't just win a playoff series, but he did it with some really good managing and a good strategy approach against the pitching. So it would be nice, maybe as a redemption story a little bit, that
he can have Verlander. How's that?
What's that?
He can have Verlander.
Okay, well,
AJ Hinch.
Right. Yeah.
You can have Verlander. You can't have
Verlander.
Bregman
doesn't need the redemption, though, like Alex Bregman does.
No, I don't.
I don't think he personally feels he needs redemption, but
no.
It would be nice.
Yeah. Number three on the list, and we've been down this road before, the Toronto Blue Jays are third on the board to land Alex Bregman if he were to leave Houston at plus 550, so 5.5 to 1. We've been down this road before with George Springer in Toronto.
Right. Yeah, and I don't know. Yeah, I'm emotionally not involved in that one either. And I think Toronto just has been they'll sign him, and Bregman's little nagging injuries will continue to happen, and it'll feel just like the George Springer signing for them.
Brandy was really, really upset when Springer went to Toronto. She's a big Springer fan, right?
Yeah.
Is she a huge Bregman fan too?
She is. Okay,
she loves him defensively,
especially.
Yeah.
I think she's kind of the point where she's kind of got a calloused soul when it comes to understanding that Astros players are going to leave.
Okay.
And she just learns to love the new young guy. I actually was kind of grilling her on that the other day. And I was like, I don't know, Brandy, do you even really love any of these guys now that everybody's gone other than Altuve? And she got so offended.
She flipped out.
Oh, and then she started grilling off, like Framber and Yordan.
Yeah, she listed all the guys she loves. Okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
She's basically all of them.
Yeah. She's a good fan. All right. These last two may get you worked up. If Toronto doesn't do it for you, how about if he went to Seattle? It's 6-1 here. If Alex Bregman went to the Seattle Mariners, that's got to make you feel a certain kind of way.
Yeah, I don't want to see him playing for the. I don't like
the Mariners at all.
No. I don't like the Mariners with or without Scott
Phonies.
Service. They were a lot worse with Scott Service when he was there.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to like that. And I don't want to see them. I don't want to see Alex Bregman be a part of turning around a franchise that you see all the time.
Well, they've not to get too caught up in semantics. Like, if he went to Washington and they became a contender, that's turning it around. Seattle has been on the fringe. I mean, they were playoff. They played the Astros in the playoffs 2 years ago. This would be one where he could be the difference in putting them over the top. And you see him 13 times a year in the regular season, you know?
Yeah, that bothers me.
And they're annoying.
And it's within the – and obviously the Astros don't have any control over it. And I don't think that would factor into Bregman's decision-making. I don't want to see the Astros that often.
Hey.
But as a fan, that would hurt me.
Astros have control in it. They can give him 8 years. They can give him however much money he wants, you know? They do have that level of control. They may just choose not to exercise it. Last one. New York Yankees, 6.5 to 1. How are we feeling if Alex Bregman is in the Yankee pinstripes next year?
I don't.
Is this the worst one? What would you hate more?
Yes, you know why?
Yeah.
This is why. Because the Yankees, who just absolutely poop their pants whenever they face good pitching, Aaron Judge. I mean, Aaron Judge, first and foremost, he's just been an abomination in the playoffs.
The comparison
between his playoff performance versus regular season, unacceptable. I feel like Bregman might be the guy that could help him with all of that. And through the course of his influence, no, he can't go to the Yankees.
No.
Yeah. Can't do it.
For the obvious reasons, and then for that reason you just said, you're right. I could see him. I could see Bregman being like finding one little thing about Aaron Judge's swing in the postseason, and it's like, this is what you're doing differently here. Why are you doing this?
For the psychological health of Astros fans, the hypocrisy of Yankees fans who would still be bashing the Astros for the being better than everybody else scandal while actively embracing Alex Bregman, it would make somebody's head literally explode.
They would still
booing
Altuve. Like,
it would. There's some poor Astros fan would have a stroke because of just not being able to handle that hypocrisy.
The hypocrisy of embracing Bregman and still booing Altuve at every Yankee game. Yes. This is Mark Feinsand, who's an MLB reporter, was on Reddit, and there were people asking like Q&A stuff, and one of the Reddit users asked about Bregman and Verlander, and he said, I'd say it's 50-50 Bregman remains with the Astros, who have another big free agent decision next year with Kyle Tucker. It's difficult for me to see Houston signing both Bregman and Tucker to long-term deals. So if the Astros bring back Bregman, it could be a sign they don't think they'll be able to do the same with Tucker. Verlander, this is interesting. Verlander could also come back, though I wouldn't be shocked if A.J. Hinch tries to bring him to Detroit. Hinch was Verlander's manager in Houston. Verlander started his career with the Tigers, so going back to Detroit would be a nice full circle way for the Hall of Famer to finish his career. I could see Verlander, because Hinch was there here for this, I could see Verlander being a pitcher version of what they were doing with Josh Reddick and Carlos Beltran and Brian McCann that year.
Yeah.
Where you're bringing in a vet because they're a vet. And and Verlander got a lot of young pitchers on that staff.
Yeah, and a lot of the pitchers that credit Verlander with teaching them how to really take it to the next level in terms of your strategy and your approach, and both from an energy standpoint and which batters, like all of that stuff. He was a really good resource for all those guys.
They might even overpay for that because they're not paying anybody right now.
Well, and I'd actually feel good about that. I don't want to see Bregman go to Detroit, but for Verlander, that just makes too much sense. You like seeing a guy go back to where he spent the vast bulk of his career.
Yeah, no, I don't think the Astros need Verlander at this point. It's for what he is. Like
Yeah, and especially in the Astros, you can't be soaking up money with players who are probably going to get injured at some point.
Yep.
Like Verlander's he's old, and he's been injured a lot. He's probably going to get injured at some point.
Yep. Deion Sanders to Dallas. It's amazing how this is picking up steam. What a few wins on the college football front can do to a guy's profile. One prominent former coach proposes this and makes the case for why Deion in Dallas. We'll talk a little bit about the Texans' upcoming opponent next.
This show is brought to you by 5-Hour Energy. Being a fan is a hands-on job, which is why we're freeing up your hands for cheering, jeering, and everything in between. With 5-Hour Energy Fan E-Pack, you'll be fully equipped to hit the tailgate with all the energy you and your fellow diehards need for rooting on the home team. No matter what, just take a shot past the rest to your entire squad and keep the good times rolling. Now available on 5hourenergy.com with the purchase of Stan the Fan 5-Hour Energy. Shipped nationwide.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.